The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case this morning is 2021-934, in re DR, off of the state. Ms. Adams.
Good morning. May it please the court, Chief Justice, Justices, Paula Adams on behalf of the state of Ohio. Unfortunately, I was supposed to share my allotted time with Mr. Peterson from the Attorney General's office today, but he's unable to appear, so unfortunately, you're going to have to bear with me for the next 15 minutes. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. The revised code 2152.84A provides for a completion of disposition review hearing after the juvenile sex offender has initially been classified. The purpose of that hearing is for the juvenile court to be able to review the disposition, the treatment, as well as the classification, the tier level, and whether or not it's still necessary for the classification to remain in force. There is an exception in A2B that the General Assembly carved out for both juveniles who have been adjudicated of a prior sexual offense, as well as for those juveniles who committed their sexually oriented offense at the age of 16 or 17. Now, the First District Court of Appeals has determined that that exception for termination violates procedural due process. And the state has brought this before this court because we think that that is completely erroneous. The analysis that was engaged in by the First District is more akin to a substantive due process. So essentially what they've determined is that a juvenile has a substantive due process right to have their classification entirely removed at that midway range, the completion of disposition.
There has the potential to be entirely removed a tier one.
They do not at that phase.
I know they don't now, but that's what they...
That's what they are,
yes.
So the reasoning behind that, and as Chief Justice O'Connor, you're very well aware, the precedents from this court in Henri CS as well as Henri DS is that the standard here is fundamental fairness. So it's the state's position that we look at the entire statutory scheme here. We have the initial classification in 0.83, which the juvenile court does have discretion of which tier to place them in. Then the next phase, if that classification had been a tier two, for example, it could have been modified, but the General Assembly has just said under the review status that they cannot be terminated at that moment. Then moving forward, after a minimum of 3 years of registering, then the juvenile court, it goes back to the juvenile court and upon the petition of the juvenile for it to be terminated at that moment in time. So it's the state's position that that entire process is something that needs to be considered when looking at a due process analysis. And the First District mentions nothing at all about that 0.85 or 0.85 petition for removal in 3 years. And we're coming actually in a couple weeks from today, DR will have that ability to file that petition before the juvenile court.
So it was considered at that hearing?
That's why the state thinks that this is meaningful. He has that record that was made because he had a hearing. He was afforded a hearing at that 0.84 moment in time, at the completion of disposition. He's had a hearing.
He had a hearing, and he can't go below a tier one.
Correct. But he did make a record of all that had occurred for his disposition and the treatment that he underwent. So all of that is properly going to be brought before the court again with an update as to why that classification should be appropriately terminated at that moment in time.
What would it take to terminate it? What sort of things does the court take into consideration at the three-year mark?
Well, the factors are set forth in the statute. They're the same factors that the court considers at the completion of disposition phase as well. And I would note that what makes especially as applied to DR, his hearing that he had for the completion of disposition was meaningful. At that moment in time, he was entirely removed from probation. So it wasn't as if nothing occurred. It wasn't meaningless as the First District occurred or had held, because at that hearing occurred and he had some result. Probation was terminated. It's just that the directive that is provided from the General Assembly is that at that moment in time, the classification should not be terminated. And if we look at that, this is a very good example, and I put forth the age and that involved, because this is an individual who was on the cusp. He was 1 month shy of 17 years old at the time he committed the offense. By the time he had the completion of disposition hearing, he was already 18 and a half. He had registered for merely about 10 months at the completion of disposition hearing. So it's certainly not unreasonable for the General Assembly to have had the goal in mind that these individuals have a more meaningful period of time for registration. And we look at, he's 18 and a half, he's going on to college. These factors are things that are important when you have an individual who's sexually offended against a 12-year-old as an older teenager. And I think that this case provides this court the perfect fact scenario in which to analyze just how wrong the First District's analysis was here for the due process. And I would like to reserve the rest of my time unless there's any further questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Moss?
Chief Justice O'Connor, Associate Justices, may it please the court. My name is Jessica Moss, and I represent the appellee DR in this case. The state wants this court to focus on the hearings before and after the end of disposition hearing for mandatory Tier 1 registrants, but that is not the issue here. This case is about the procedures at the end of disposition hearing and whether that hearing affords meaningful review.
Well, so what procedures?
The 0.84 hearing as to reviewing the child's classification, whether the child has successfully completed.
So what was wrong with the hearing? Was there a lack of notice? Was there a lack of right to cross-examine? What procedure was missing in the hearing?
The procedures that were missing in the hearing is a meaningful opportunity for review of the juvenile court.
That's not a procedure. I mean, the court could review it, right? The court could review it as much as they wanted. Your objection is that the legislature had said that it had to last 3 years, right? That's the essence of your claim, that you think a court should be able to terminate it less than 3 years.
The essence of this claim is that the legislator said that the court has to review numerous factors about whether the child has been rehabilitated. The court has to look at whether or not they pose a risk to reoffend. And the fact is that the court
But you're not complaining about the factors the court looks at. You're complaining about the court's lack of an ability to give you the remedy you want, right? That you terminate in less than 3 years.
This is not a right to a specific remedy. It's a right for the opportunity for the court to have discretion, and that's what makes the hearing.
Aren't you saying the same thing? You're saying that you want the opportunity for the court to terminate it in less than 3 years, right?
It's for the court to have discretion to determine what would be an appropriate
discretion,
penalty.
Discretion, kind of the same thing, right? So your complaint is that the legislature passed a law that says that you cannot, no matter what hearing you have, you cannot terminate this unless 3 years elapses. Right?
So the legislator did.
Is it yes or no? Do you agree or disagree with that?
The legislator did carve that out in the second section.
And that's your complaint, right? You want that to be less. You want the court to be able to, whenever the court evaluates the factors and feels it's appropriate, you want the court to be able to terminate it in less time than that.
Aren't you really arguing that there's...
Hold on. Can she answer my question, please?
Well, you keep interrupting her. Go ahead.
No, she's not.
All right. Justice DeWine, continue.
It is not that... For hearings to be meaningful, the court has to have an opportunity to review what is appropriate and what is not appropriate.
Again, you want it to be less than 3 years. I mean, so you're not challenging the procedures, you're challenging the law that says that it has to last 3 years, right?
We're challenging the procedures because the procedures require the court to consider all of these factors, but they can't do anything with these factors. So
right.
Essentially,
you're not challenging what the court can consider. You're challenging, as you said, what the court can do or can't do, right?
I'm challenging the fact that this hearing is meaningless because it affords no
remedy. You're challenging it's meaningless because the court can't terminate in less than 3 years. So how is that a procedural due process challenge? I mean, you're challenging the law that was passed by the state legislature that says the court, that this has to last 3 years. So how is that procedural due process?
When you look at cases such as the imposition for a serious youthful offender of actually imposing the adult sentence, that again looks to whether or not it allows the court to have a hearing to determine whether or not that sentence is going to be imposed, and even then, what is the appropriate sentence?
But you're challenging the remedy, not the procedure. I mean, you've got case, like, how do you deal with cases like Connecticut Department of Public Safety versus Doe? I mean, where the court says, well, if it's not of consequence to the statutory scheme, then there's no procedural due process right there. There may be a substantive due process, but if the fact that you want to establish doesn't affect what the law is, then it's not procedural due process.
And the difference in that case compared to the juvenile cases is the fact that specifically juveniles are not put at a tier level based on their initial classification. And what DR was challenging was exactly what the court was required to consider, these factors of whether he had been rehabilitated and whether or not he poses a risk to reoffend. So it's not asking the court to have a hearing that didn't already exist that the legislator set up for the court to have.
What is the difference in due process between adult criminal court and juvenile court? I'm looking at the issue of fundamental fairness.
So we know for juveniles, due process standard is different for juveniles, and we afford a different due process rights, and it has to be a flexible concept because, again, we're dealing with juveniles and the nature of juvenile court and those procedures.
So are you saying that the statute denies the ability for the juvenile court to exercise that fundamental fairness because it's a flat period no matter what?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Counsel, you agree with me that the juvenile court is a non-constitutional court in Ohio, correct? It's not created by the Constitution.
That is correct.
Created by statute, correct?
That is correct.
And well, then where in the statute does, I'm reading from the first district's decision, where's in that statute says the juvenile court may exercise its discretion to continue DR's classification as a tier one juvenile offender registrant or declassify him. Where in the statute is that?
So throughout the statutory scheme, it talks about the importance of this 0.84 hearing and the fact that...
So you're saying it's in 0.84?
In 0.82 and in 0.83.
That they can declassify a tier one?
It talks about that...
Under these facts?
It talks about that the court will review the classification and determine whether it will modify or terminate the classification.
You'll agree with me, under these facts, 17-year-old, there is no statute allowing the juvenile court to declassify him from his tier one status.
That is correct, and that's what the First District found to be a due process.
But again, I'm asking where the General Assembly said they could do that.
It's not that the General Assembly decided that. The First District determined that was a procedural due process violation.
So a statutory court, the Court of Appeals says that a statutory court without the authority to do what the First District is ordering can go do that. Is that right?
The point of the court is to review whether or not statutes are unconstitutional, and that's what the First District decided, was this was an unconstitutional statute.
What they decided was they ordered remand, correct?
That is correct.
To determine whether he should be continued the current registration or declassify him. Where in the General Assembly statutes, all of which have been upheld as constitutional by this court so far, does it say that a juvenile court can declassify him?
Your Honor, it does not say that, and that's what the court found unconstitutional. Essentially, what the First District did, although specifically not specifically saying that, is that they struck the last sentence in A2B that talks about that this section does not apply to mandatory registrants.
So they want to apply it to mandatory registrants, right?
In this case, it was as applied to DR, who is a Tier 1 registrant.
Okay. What you're saying is that he should, you're not saying he should be declassified. He wants another opportunity, and he wants that opportunity to be declassified. The court could continue him after 3 years, could it not?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay. So how long can the court continue his Tier 1 registration?
So after the end of disposition hearing, it would have an 8.85 hearing, which would happen 3 years later. And if he was not declassified at that point, it would be another 3 years before he would have
so
the opportunity.
So there's a continuum of review processes built in for specifically for a juvenile.
That is correct. But the problem here is that we have individuals who were classified, let's say, as a Tier 3 at the highest level at their initial classification, and DR, who's classified as a Tier 1 at the lowest level, that all of those individuals at this point in time can be moved down to a Tier or declassified at the 0.85 hearing. And specifically for DR, it does not afford this ability for the court to utilize their discretion. And this court got...
So are you saying a younger person that's a Tier 3 could be totally declassified? Is that what, but he cannot be declassified beyond or below a Tier 1?
So for mandatory registrants, how the statute is written, that none of them are eligible for declassification until the 0.85 hearing, and that's...
Well, I understand we're talking about the 0.85 hearing. I get that.
So Tier 3 or Tier 2 cannot be declassified at that hearing. They can only be moved down a tier, correct?
That is correct. But Tier 1s like DR are the only ones that do not have ability to go anywhere.
That's correct, because that's the lowest level. So that's a kind of apples and oranges comparison, correct? I mean, a Tier 3 or a Tier 2 can be moved down to a Tier 3 to 2, maybe even 3 to 1, and 2 to 1, but there's nowhere for 1 to go. Correct?
That is correct.
So you're saying the Court of Appeals here said that the statute, the provision of the statute that does not allow evaluation of whether a Tier 1 should be declassified completely is unconstitutional. That's what the First District said?
That's what they said, but because the juvenile court is not afforded any discretion, what would be an appropriate penalty? In this case, the juvenile court...
Is it classification and penalty the same?
So what would be an appropriate penalty at the end of disposition hearing? And so the juvenile court in this case wanted to declassify DR, but didn't have the opportunity to.
But aren't penalty and classification separate? Isn't that a separate analysis?
A classification is a penalty, but when we look at the 0.84 hearing as to whether or not, again, a person has been rehabilitated, whether they pose a risk to reoffend, there's no...
So you say classification, you put classification as a penalty? You put them in the same basket?
Yes.
And so then the Court of Appeals is saying it's a penalty that the court has no discretion to keep in place or to take away, and therefore there's no meaningful review. So the Court of Appeals says we strike that portion of the statute as unconstitutional?
That is correct.
And what's the Court of Appeals' authority to do that?
In reviewing whether or not a statute is constitutional.
Well, let me ask it this way then. Is there a constitutionally protected right not to be a tier one sex offender?
That's not the issue.
Well, we're talking about, you said it was a constitutional issue.
We're talking specifically about what procedures are at the .84 hearing.
Well, I thought with Justice DeWine, we agreed it's what the court can do, move it to a lower tier, right? That's the issue.
It's not so much just what the court can do, but whether it's a meaningful opportunity for a hearing and review.
Well, your colleague on the other side said that actually at this hearing, DR was removed from probation at that time. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Isn't that meaningful?
Just because a person is removed, the whole point of the .84 hearing is to happen immediately before or after the end of disposition hearing. It's not to take a person off of probation, and therefore the fact that that happened had no impact on what the purpose of the .84 hearing.
So making that record so that 3 years later they could be declassified isn't important?
It's not that it's not important, but that doesn't make the hearing meaningful.
Well, if they make a record and somebody gets out of probation, sounds pretty meaningful to me.
It's not meaningful because the .84 hearing is not about terminating probation. That's the expectation is that probation is going to be terminated because we're at the end of disposition for that child.
Are we back again to the question of fundamental fairness because the court can't exercise in juvenile due process the judgment of fundamental fairness to determine whether tier one classification is appropriate any longer?
That is correct, Your Honor. This comes back to the fundamental fairness. And within fundamental fairness is for the juvenile court to have discretion to determine an appropriate penalty, and especially to review, in this case, a child's classification before the child enters adulthood. And what this court looked at in In Re Diaz was the fact that .84 is a stopping point. It was specifically important that the classification could continue past age 18 or past 21 because the juvenile court had the opportunity to have this end of disposition hearing determine whether or not to terminate the child's classification or whether they would continue the classification.
Doesn't the idea of fundamental fairness, right, connects to what the purpose of the hearing is, right? I mean, the way the U.S. Supreme Court has explained it is that the procedure has to be fundamentally fair in light of the liberty interest at stake, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so what is the liberty interest here, and what is the fundamental right?
The fundamental right, in its sense, is that a right to a meaningful hearing and the opportunity.
Well, there's no right by itself to have a meaningful hearing, right? I don't have a right to have a meaningful hearing about whether I get to drink a glass of water at night or not, but you have a right. The right to a meaningful hearing is connected to the right that's attached to. So what is the fundamental right here?
The fundamental right is to an end of disposition hearing, and because of that, you have a right to a meaningful hearing.
Again, there's no right to a meaningful hearing by itself, right? I mean, there's no, the right attaches to what it's for. So what is the fundamental right at stake? I mean, due process only applies in light of what the interests are, right? It's Matthews v. Eldridge. You look at the interest. You look at whether the procedures are appropriate for that. So what's the interest here that the juvenile has?
Juvenile has a right to be rehabilitated within the juvenile system, the right to be treated as a child.
Okay, but we're talking here about registration. We're not talking about any of those things, right?
Well, these are all the rights that are affected by this continued classification. But again, in its court in its basic sense, we're talking about the right to have a meaningful hearing, and the standard has to be flexible.
So there's just a freestanding right to have a meaningful hearing. Anytime someone has a hearing, there's a constitutional right that has to be meaningful. Is that your position?
Yes, Your Honor.
One follow-up question. In Re Diaz, which was issued by this court in 2016, we said fundamental fairness requires that the judge decide the appropriateness of any such penalty. Is that what you mean by a meaningful hearing?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Brief briefly, I'd like to just touch upon, there was a question from Chief Justice O'Connor about the amount of time associated with this. It will never go beyond 10 years. If he were to be continued beyond the 3 years. Secondly, with regard to Justice Fisher's question regarding the statutory nature of juvenile courts, and that is another fundamental point to make here is that the overriding purposes of juvenile dispositions was not considered by the First District because the whole idea, and when we have an individual at this age, 16 and 17 years old, that system of graduated dispositions that's required is for the juvenile court to look at is important, and that's exactly what happened here. This is the poster case, and that is true.
The graduated evaluation is good, but why can't that evaluation take place at that initial hearing for a Tier 1 offender?
The evaluation did occur, and much did occur, and I don't agree with defense counsel that the purpose of the .84 statute is only to look at the classification. It specifically requires the juvenile court to review the effectiveness of the disposition, their treatment, as well as reviewing the classification.
You're right, and I agree with you. It is a more holistic review. But after all of that, let's say all of that review was positive toward the juvenile, he or she still can't go on with his or her life without being classified because the judge doesn't have that option of saying you're no longer classified a Tier 1 offender.
Well, they can go on with their life. It's just what we have is a directive from the General Assembly that we have to have a more meaningful time, 10 months.
But the General Assembly, that's the very point. So they're saying the General Assembly is deciding where the juvenile court judge is right there with all the material who might decide probation's gone, you've fulfilled everything you need to do, you've been a model person, you can go on with your life, but the General Assembly still says, despite my evaluation of everything, you still have to be a Tier 1 offender, or classified as a Tier 1 offender.
Right, and I think that one thing that we need to look at is what's involved with being a Tier 1 offender. And for this individual—
Well, let's look at the purpose of the registration for a Tier 1 offender post-disposition in the juvenile matter, where probation is lifted, obviously positive effectiveness of treatment, everything going the way it should. But obviously, the judge's hands are tied with the registration requirement.
Right.
And what's the purpose of having this juvenile register?
And the statute has that purpose set forth, and that would be in the Chapter 2950 section, and that is both to assure public safety, and
the prognosis, if you will, is that this child is rehabilitated.
Well, I don't think that we could go that far. And I think if when the court reviews the specific record here, we have the magistrate who held the hearing and heard the testimony. And then when it went to a visiting court judge for review of that magistrate's decision, it's very clear that the visiting judge had just a general interest
Counsel, regardless of if you're saying it wasn't as meaningful, let's say you have a hyper-meaningful evaluation, and by all accounts, the young person, juvenile, should be cleared. There still isn't the opportunity to do that.
Well, and it's not... For the classification, right. And in this scenario, I think that the court, the factors, and again, if there weren't this director... this directive from the General Assembly, it would have probably been borne out more in the record. But he was doing well, by all intents and purposes, doing well. There was some indication in one of the reports from the psychologist that he still had access and was reviewing pornography during his period of probation. That would have been obviously looked at, more closely. That was mentioned, but the record doesn't bear all of that out.
How is registering as a Tier 1 offender related to that?
Well, I...
And you're saying that is, he's looking at pornography.
Well, if you isolate that, that may not sound the most egregious thing, but when you're viewing pornography causes you to feel like a 12-year-old is giving you mixed signals, then that might be a problem for that particular individual, and that's why...
Is that problem present?
I believe that that's borne out in the reports and all of that information. And again, the record's not going to be completely filled with all this information because there is that statutory preclusion.
All right. I would think that continued probation would be the way to... I mean, continued probation would address the concerns that you have. How does Tier 1 registration address the concerns that you just brought up?
Well, he still has that requirement,
that
oversight by the juvenile court.
Wait a minute. What oversight?
That if he doesn't comply with the registration.
Okay, all he has to do is do a rote registration, right? Nobody looks to see, are you looking at pornography? With a registration, right?
Right.
Okay, so he goes through the mechanics of a registration. What is the purpose of those mechanics?
Well, the General Assembly has put forth that the registration aspects are necessary for public safety. So
period. Public safety.
Public safety. Well, and again, I think for...
It's not a rehabilitative activity.
Well, we don't know for this particular juvenile.
Does that say that in the statute? It's to rehabilitate someone. We make them register.
No, it does not say rehabilitate.
It's public safety. It's public safety.
And deterrent, I would think, to a certain degree.
Does it say that?
It doesn't. Well, I believe that that is part of the 2950 purposes of it, that sometimes that, and that's in the adult section that applies to juveniles. So I think in this scenario, it comes back, and I think that the most important case that guides this court is Henri D.S., and in that case, this court looked at that entire statutory scheme.
Didn't you already acknowledge that the pornography was in the beginning of his probation? He was counseled on the issue, and there are no further incidents or concerns. Isn't that the truth that's in the record?
And this was brought forth, yes, at the completion of disposition hearing, that entire summary, if you will.
But you don't deny that this was something he did in the beginning of his probation, and once he was counseled on it, nothing more occurred, correct?
Correct. And this is, we're talking about a 10-month span. And again, that's why this is so important for these older juveniles, for there to be an exception to termination.
Sure. And is there any case law that deterrence is an issue in juvenile law? I'm not even sure kids have the ability.
Oh, I think that if you look at defense counsel's, the amicus brief in that, a lot of that talks about, that because if there is a violation of the registration aspect in DR's situation, that would go to adult court. He would be, prosecuted as an adult for violation of any of those. So I certainly think that's a deterrent effect.
So you think that a child can recognize that... since I'm under Tier 1 registration, I better be careful or I might end up in adult court. Think that's what kids do and that there's case law that supports that?
I don't think that's a fair question because when we're talking about, he's an adult by this point in time. He's not a child anymore. And that's why, again, the General Assembly carving out that exception for 16 and 17 years old, it doesn't give juvenile court a whole lot to use the tools that they have. And if they're, on the cusp of 18 at the time. And I think that, again, that was recognized by this court in DS, and I think that provides the best guidance for this court. So we would ask that you reverse the First District's decision in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.